From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. At the May 9th Postal Board of Governors meeting, Chairman Ramon Martinez heralded a recently issued USPS Office of Inspector General white paper regarding the investment of funds set aside for postal employee pensions. This includes past, present, and future employee withholdings and the Postal Service's contributions for the Civil Service Retirement System and the Federal Employees Retirement System, as CSRS and FERS, respectively. Chairman Martinez referenced that the report estimated that the Postal Service accumulated contributions, had the Postal Service's accumulated contributions been invested in stocks and bonds rather than low-yielding Treasury securities, the accumulated funds contributed by employees in the Postal Service would have reached $1.2 trillion rather than the current measly balance of $298 billion. Clearly, the difference has implications to the Postal Service's pension liability and the agency's contributions to reduce that liability. In addition, at the May 17th House of Representatives Postal Oversight hearing, Representative Gary Palmer also mentioned the white paper in his questioning of the Postmaster General. With me today to discuss this postal pension white paper is its lead author, Joy Sanzone. Joy is a research specialist at the United States Postal Service Office of Inspector General. In the past, she's been involved in the IG's analysis of cost and revenue data of our nation's post offices, and as this white paper has demonstrated most recently, she authored the analysis of how the Postal Service invests in its employee retirement funds. Joy, thank you for joining me today on Apps Chat.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Before we begin talking about the actual findings and conclusions of the Inspector General white paper, I want to clarify a key distinction between the work previously conducted by the Office of Inspector General and the Postal Regulatory Commission, in fact, relating to postal pensions. As I recall, past inquiries dating back well over a decade evaluated the actuarial assumptions underlying the magnitude of the Postal Service's pension liability and its value. These studies suggested that the Postal Service was not treated fairly by the Office of Personnel Management in the calculation of the fund balance and its liability. The issue that you focus on in your report is not this issue. It's something else, right?
Correct. With this paper, we focused on the potential impact of investing the funds, but we didn't look into the debate around postal liabilities, specifically for CSRS.
Let's talk about why Inspector General Tammy Whitcomb Hull asked you to conduct the present evaluation of the Postal Service retirement investment. Why?
Sure. So this we wanted to compare the investment returns that the Postal Service has earned on its retiree funds since 1972 and compare that to an asset mix of stocks and bonds, a mix that might look more like how the public and private sectors invest their retiree funds. This was also a request by the Board of Governors and builds on prior OIG work around the liabilities and around investing. Prior OIG work has looked at how foreign posts invest their retiree assets, and also in 2017 we did a similar report. Instead of a historical look back like we're doing now, it was a forward-looking projection of if the Postal Service invested some of its funds now, what would the impact be in 20 years?
What this report looks at is a look back, not a look forward, because we can't anticipate what the stocks and bond market will be looking at, let's say, over the next 30 to 40 years.
Exactly. But we can look back at the returns from the S&P 500 or the bond market and estimate if the Postal Service had invested 60% of the funds in stocks and 40% in bonds, this is where they would be today.
Let's assume the Postal Service had invested in stocks and bonds at the proportion that was represented in the report, 60% in stocks, 40% into bonds. Were you assuming it be invested in an index funds charting a, whether it be the Dow Jones Industrial Average or some type of point, or is it investment in just bonds and stocks generally?
Yeah, so we looked at, we used the S&P 500 as, and we used that return as our estimation for the returns from the stock portion of the portfolio. For bonds, we used the Bloomberg Aggregate Bond Index for those returns.
So these are index. We're looking at an index, not like if we...
Not each, Apple stock or something.
Yeah, yeah, like if the Postal Service bought Apple, Intel, Disney...
Exactly.
General Motors, we're not looking at that.
Exactly.
We're looking at index funds. Let's assume the Postal Service had done what is represented in the report, in the white paper. How would it have affected the Postal Service's liability and their finances as far as their decision making?
So it wouldn't impact their liabilities. The liabilities are estimated by OPM and are based on a variety of factors like the assumed interest rate, the life expectancy of retirees. So the liabilities wouldn't be impacted. It would really be the fund balances over time that would be much greater today if they had been able to invest.
So if the fund's balance was much greater today than it currently is, how does that inform Postal Service decision-making about other things?
Sure. So one of the conclusions from our report was that currently they have a $96 billion unfunded liability. So their liability is almost $100 billion greater than what they currently have in the funds. Our analysis showed that they could have had $1.2 trillion in the funds and a surplus of nearly $800 billion. And, you know, that has tremendous implications for the Postal Service. And, you know, we acknowledge in our report our analysis doesn't exactly mirror what real life would have been like. I don't think they would, in actuality, have an $800 billion surplus in the funds. But it's interesting to think about, and there are certainly implications from that. You know, how could this free up cash to spend on the processing and delivery network, for example, or stabilizing the workforce?
Would that mean that the Postal Service would have to contribute less to fund its retirement because of the growth in the fund?
Yeah, that's certainly a potential implication of this. And another thing stemming from that is that it could potentially minimize price increases in the future if they are able to do this and generate higher investment returns. Because, you know, the Postal Service has to generate its own revenue. And obviously retirement costs are a significant cost for the agency. So if they can minimize retirement costs, in turn, that might help to minimize price increases moving forward.
How, the 60-40 mix that you assumed, or that you created these scenarios, where did the 60-40 mix come from?
Well, that's a great question. We wanted to have a portfolio that sort of resembled how private pension funds invest, how other public pension funds invest. So this was pretty close. And those other funds typically invest in other things besides stocks and bonds, so private equity, real estate. So this doesn't exactly mirror how other pension systems are investing, but it's a rough estimation.
So is it sort of like, and I'm not making a direct comparison, like postal employees, federal employees are familiar with the thrift savings plan, and you have these what are called L funds, life cycle funds, and there are certain mixes assumed. Is that something, does that go into the thought process? Do you have a projected lifespan, like 30 years out, that you, let's say, an L, sort of like an L fund for 2060?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
The life, the way the investment, the 60-40 mix, does it replicate anything that we are familiar with, like in the thrift savings plan?
Oh, okay. That's a great question. I'm not sure how closely it mirrors the L fund options. Another reason we chose the 60-40, we didn't want it to be overly aggressive, overly risky, but we also didn't want it to be overly conservative. So we felt this was a balanced mix of stocks and bonds.
How would a more non-federal, because everything now is invested in T-bills, Treasury securities, how would a non-federal investment strategy impact the Postal Service's decision-making? I'm trying, you know, because right now we're locked into Treasury securities, whatever their longevity is at a very low yield. I make decisions based upon that type of growth or non-growth in the fund. How does it inform the Postal Service?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, there are some implications of this might help free up cash to invest in other areas of the business. Completely blanked.
It's okay.
Yeah, I think it could certainly help. They could consider where this money saved could be spent elsewhere in the agency.
One of the tricky things, and if this were to be implemented, now I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, you are not making any recommendations in this
paper.
You're merely analyzing what an option, one of the, of a variety of options could be in dealing with the Postal Service's pensions. But from a practical standpoint, is there any way to segregate, you know, the Postal Service contributions and employee contributions that is already in the Civil Service Disability and Retirement Trust Fund? I know you make certain assumptions, but I'm just saying logistically, how could that be done?
Yeah, that's an interesting question and something we talked about among our project team initially, but we didn't ultimately look into that. It's certainly an interesting question, though, because currently all of the money from the Postal Service and from any other federal agency is all in one pool of money. So I'm sure it would be complicated logistically to separate the Postal Service funds, but we didn't get into the nitty-gritty of how might that actually happen.
It's also interesting, and I know this is something that, or I assume this is something that was not addressed in the report, is that right now, because all the funds are invested in Treasury securities, the good faith and credit of the United States government is behind the funds. If you take, if you're not investing in Treasury securities, there is no good faith and credit of the federal government. Is that something to be worried about?
You know, I'm not really sure. I can't really speak to that. That wasn't part of what we looked into for this paper.
When I might buy a U.S. savings bond or a Treasury securities, or you know, you assume you know you have that type of expectation. So this would be a different type of investment. I mean, tremendous benefit. You know, on the plus side, tremendous opportunity for growth. The question is good faith and credit. The federal government going to back it up right now. The CSRS Disability Trust Fund is backed up. I know in the report you looked at the Railroad Retirement Fund and the Tennessee Valley Authority's retirement. Why did you choose these two entities as point of comparison?
Sure. So part of our paper looked at other state, local, private pension funds, as well as some federal examples like the ones you mentioned. So the National Railroad Retirement Investment Trust invests the assets of the Railroad Retirement Board, and they are in a diversified portfolio and managed by an independent board. So we thought it was important to highlight that this is being done at the federal level, and that particular fund, congressional legislation allowed them to do that. The Tennessee Valley Authority is similar in that it invests its retiree funds in a diversified portfolio, and there's a board of directors that manages that fund. The TVA is interesting and analogous to the Postal Service in that they raise their own revenue. They don't get any tax dollars, so there is some point of comparison there to the Postal Service.
And it's a public utility for those states that are impacted by the Tennessee Valley Authority. In the Tennessee Valley. You said they manage their portfolio, that you have this independent entity managing a portfolio. Are you, when you were making the assumptions in your report, were you assuming a managed portfolio, or we were talking about an indexed portfolio?
Yeah, we didn't consider that as part of our paper. We didn't think about the governance or the management of the funds, just if they were invested in stocks and bonds.
You had mentioned public employee retirement funds generally on the local, state, and state level. Generally speaking, they invest in private equities?
Yes, it's pretty much universal based on our research that they are invested in stocks, bonds, real estate, hedge funds, etc. And importantly, over the past 20 years or so, in the aggregate, those funds have outperformed what the Postal Service has earned in interest.
I'm just musing now. I'm not asking you to weigh in on this, unless you want to. I don't think you will. But there's a lot of argument right now and debate in the political arena about investment options, like whether or not you invest in diversity. You invest in firms with diversity. Sustainable. There's a whole of sustainable stocks and so forth. And I'm just thinking out loud, is the Postal Service going to be captive to political ebbs and flows of their investment options? I know the Thrift Savings Plan now is being confronted with, because they created a window, an investment window, where some of the money is supposedly going into stocks and companies that may not be as friendly to the United States government as we would like. So I'm just sort of thinking out loud, is the Postal Service going to be sort of critiqued on that basis if they go into private equities?
Yeah, well, I certainly don't have a crystal ball to predict the future and what will be the outcome if the Postal Service is able to do this. I will say, in our paper, we had a 60-40 stock bond split, and we specifically limited that to U.S. stocks and U.S. bonds. So in our analysis, we didn't include any foreign investments or anything like that. We just stuck to U.S. stocks and bonds for this
paper. I wouldn't say blue chip stocks or blue chip bonds, but general index funds on U.S. bonds. It could be large market, large stocks, low cap, high, you know. It could be we're just talking about the mix. What's the next step for the IG in this? You've done the white paper. Mm-hmm. It's getting some play. We're getting play on Naps Chat. It got play at the postal hearing.
Yes.
The Board of Governors has sort of embraced it and is promoting it. What's the next step? What do you hope happens with this paper?
Yeah, so our paper didn't recommend anything to the Postal Service. Our goal with this really was to demonstrate really the opportunity lost from not investing in a more diversified portfolio. And our goal was for this to be informative for the board, for the IG, for the Postal Service, and for other postal stakeholders. And as you said, it has gotten some traction, so that's exciting.
I could anticipate the Postal Service going to its friends on Capitol Hill and starting a process of creating a legislative framework do this. My expectation is the IG will be, I would say, recruited or drafted into the discussion. When that happens, you get deeper into the weeds on this?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the IG will want our team to look at in the future, so it's hard for me to say.
So I just want to come back to a thing. You are not, the Inspector General, the Office of Inspector General, is not making any specific policy recommendations. This is more of an exploration of what if.
Yes,
what if
correct.
We did this? This is the effect. This is the balance. And the Postal Service could run with it, does not have to run with it. Is there any role for the Postal Regulatory Commission in this?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know how they would be involved, but you know, there's a possibility that they could be.
So now it would appear it's in the hands of the Postal Service, what they want to do with the information.
I think it's in their hands.
And whether or not they go to Congress, because it would appear also that this proposal or this idea, I wouldn't even say a suggestion, but this idea would need legislation to really occur?
Yes. The current investment strategy of investing in treasury bonds is written into law. So the Postal Service can't decide tomorrow it's going to invest in stocks. So because it's written into the law, congressional action is needed to undo that and to allow the Postal Service to invest in outside of Treasury bonds.
And I know for a fact that you haven't you haven't asked for, nor have you received any comments for the Department of the Treasury on this.
Well, I'm sure someone over there has read it, but we didn't get any formal comments.
With that, yeah, I want to thank you, Joy, for joining me today on NAPS Chat. This has been Joy Sanzone, the United States Postal Service Office of Inspector General. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Bob.
And hopefully our listeners got a little bit more information that they would not have heard from otherwise. And I would think so. And I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm going to stand right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm going